Yeah.
I know, I feel the same way.
What do you want?
I feel the same way. I want a better world, and I think we've just turned ourselves back 100 years plus. It's like
Mars. It's just nice that there are fewer people there, so it's got to be a better world.
I don't think there are any people there, right?
There are a handful of rovers. Some of them are dead.
Oh, for God's sake. Well, they're not people. Rovers are not people.
You know, that's very small-minded of you.
Yeah, I'm kind of in that space today. Too much is happening.
So rovers are just disposable to you, huh? They're not real.
No, they're not real.
We just shoot them halfway across the solar system, and if they die, it's no big deal. Wow.
Yeah, I don't know. Do they have a soul?
I don't know. Cold-hearted woman, you know that?
I am. Well, you know.
They're on a one-way mission.
Mm-hmm.
They're not coming back.
A one-way mission, too.
Can't you muster some feeling for them? Some compassion?
No. Ugh. I'm fresh out of compassion. I'm exhausted this week.
Did you know?
I don't know much right now.
That the United States has half of the global art sales annually.
I read that somewhere.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah, that is crazy.
That really did surprise me. I mean, it's a big world. And the U.S. is known for a lot of stuff, but art really isn't one of them.
No, it sure is. It isn't. Only in certain places. You sent me this thing to read about the top art cities in the U.S., and I wasn't surprised. It would have been the top five I would have picked without knowing anything.
I mean, I wouldn't have put L.A. in there because I don't think of L.A. as having culture.
Yeah, it's kind of that West Coast vibe culture.
I'm highly biased against L.A., I guess.
Oh, I love L.A.
You see, you're a driver, and I'm not.
Right.
I don't understand how those Californians drive. They have their own way of driving.
Yeah, you got to get used to it.
It's like Tom Petty has this lyric. He says, you know, in the South, everything gets done with a Southern accent. They've got their own way of doing things, their own way of talking, their own way of working. And I get that. I've been to the South. I kind of understand it. But the California, I don't understand them. It's like they're from Mars or something.
They kind of are. I fit in pretty well in L.A. I just had to get that in there, right? Does that surprise you?
It's the same thing. I mean, if you want to get around on Mars, you got to have a car.
A rover.
You know, in this case, a rover. Yeah, you got to have wheels.
We could arrange that.
And that's all they do all day long on Mars is drive around from one place to the next because everything's so far away.
Right. Oh, gosh.
It's a big sprawl.
I could dig some sprawl. I could dig, like, less people's opinions at this point.
New York came in number one, which I don't think is a surprise.
No surprise.
When you think of art cities, you think New York is certainly in the top 10 art cities of the world, probably top three.
Mm-hmm.
But then Los Angeles comes in behind them, which was a big surprise to me. San Francisco was a little bit of a surprise too, just because it's so small. But then Chicago and Miami follow out the...
I thought Miami would have been like second or third.
You know, it wants to be. That's the thing with Miami.
It does want to be.
It's trying really hard.
Uh-huh.
And it's doing a great job. You know, there are a lot of wackos over in Florida, and art world and wackos and people with more money than sense really go well together. So it's an untapped market where it's getting tapped now, but it's one of those places, like if you wanted to have a Venn diagram of too much money, not enough taste, crazy people, Florida has a lot of that.
Oh, God, Florida. I don't even want to go back there.
There's some way you could drop guns in that mix too, then, you know, Florida.
I think
like
they already
right
did, didn't they?
No, bananas.
Bananas.
Duct tape.
Okay.
Invisible art. Stuff like that.
Yeah, bananas, duct tape, invisible art. Yeah, so getting back to New York, it just remains the leading art capital.
Feels a little vestigial at this point, though.
Mm-hmm.
Where's the creative center of the United States or the world? I don't know where it is now. I mean, where is the real stuff going down? What is generating really interesting stuff?
I have some ideas, but I don't.
Well, that's you're here to share your ideas.
I think an emerging center is Seoul.
There you go again. This is why you want to talk about this article, isn't it? Because you could talk about Seoul.
Now, I don't know much about Seoul, but I do follow a lot of artists on Instagram and a lot of their museums. And I think the whole music industry, I think they're doing a lot of things artistically that are finally being appreciated outside of their peninsula. And I'm really happy about that. And I find that more exciting and more interesting than some of the art that I'm following online. A lot more interesting than some of the stuff I'm seeing in the States. So maybe it's just me. That's my two cents.
You know, we don't have a lot of new interesting things in the States because places like New York are primary source for art. And right. Are they cutting edge anymore? I don't know that they are.
I don't know that they are.
And it's not like we teach art in school.
Nope.
So it's not like we're going to get a lot of emerging artists here.
No. In L.A., the Getty, and I know you have a bias, right, against the Getty?
I haven't been there, so I wouldn't know.
It's beautiful. I think I actually liked the architecture. I felt very comfortable there.
The only thing I have to say about the Getty out there in L.A., or mm-hmm. is it in L.A.?
Kinda.
Well, right. Isn't everything kinda?
I just remember, it's such a while ago that I was there, and I just remember driving up the hill. You could see the Getty.
That's the thing. I used to read mountain bike magazines, and this one guy was complaining vociferously about how they put this horrible gallery right in the middle of his mountain bike trail.
Right.
I'm like, there are so many trails out there in California, and they're all really good, at least the ones I've seen. And you can't give up one trail to have a world-class museum.
Right.
That seems like a pretty shitty balance.
I thought it was very impressive. I mean, from the minute...
I just remembered something horrible that happened to me over the weekend.
Oh, no. What happened? We're not talking about the Getty anymore?
I took my mountain bike out for the first time in a while. I did mostly road riding, but I rode down to the mountain and did some of the trails there. And I found the worst trail in Phoenix.
Oh, really?
Both ends of this trail are nicely groomed. It makes you think you're going to have a pretty good trail. And then it just dumps you into hell, the hellscape of South Mountain.
Oh, no. South Mountain?
There are parts of it, I don't think you could, it was barely walkable, let alone
rideable. Did you turn around or did you just keep going?
I had to keep going because I was already like a third of the way through, so I didn't know what was coming or it was, you know. By the time I realized what kind of hell I'd gotten myself into, it's too late.
How did you ride? Did you have to get off your bike and carry it?
I walked a lot.
Holy shit.
And it's perfect example of Phoenix. Like, part of the trail is heavily groomed and very nice. And then I don't know if whoever was cutting the trail just hates their job or hates people in general.
Probably both.
They lure you in and then they smack you around real bad.
Right.
And that's Phoenix. Like, you go up to Scottsdale and all the trails up there are overgroomed, right? It's a little bit too easy, but you know, if you have a $10,000 E mountain bike, I get Scottsdale people want everything to be a little bit easier because they're so rich and that's just the way they are.
I don't know.
But Phoenix is a little bit on the other side, and it's embarrassing because like little cities like Moab are so much better at cutting trails and having dual use trails and stuff like that.
Well, but I guess you won't be using that trail anytime soon.
I will not be going back on that trail.
Right.
They could have made some very small choices. Like, there is one point where the trail drops down into a wash crossing.
Nice.
Crossing. It's not even, well, you know, that happens because it's the desert.
Yeah.
There are washes all over the mountain.
Yeah.
But as it comes back out, the trail heads directly into a boulder.
Nice.
If you just go 3 feet to the left or 3 feet to the right, you could have gone around the boulder.
Maybe the boulder was there to warn you off to not go any further.
That's the thing. Both ends of the trail were nice. It was just the middle section that really kind of...
Right. I would have gotten to the boulder and turned around.
You wouldn't have gotten that far.
I wouldn't have gotten that far. The last time I went on a hike was years ago. I was still in yoga teacher training, and I went with some friends. We hiked up, I don't even know where the hell, Tom Thumb or some shit, like up north. And rookie error, I thought, oh, I'm going to start hiking. So I bought like new hiking boots. They weren't necessarily broken in. Both of my big toenails fell off.
Oh, Jesus. You're a bad person to talk to in the morning.
I mean, it was so painful. I couldn't even do downward facing dog in training. I mean, all of a sudden, like my toenail, I mean, it was horrible. Jesus. And so, I mean, any trail in Phoenix, that's what I always say. I'm never going back in that trail. It doesn't matter. I don't care if it's flat as a board. I'm never going back in that trail. I'm just done.
I can't cope with the things you tell me in the morning.
That was epic.
I'm hitting the coffee pretty hard right now because of you.
Oh, my gosh. So much for the top art cities in the U.S. I mean, Phoenix isn't one of them. I didn't expect that.
Well, you know, it wasn't really that much of an article. It was just pointing out the top five. And it was also pointing out the other thing I took away from it is that for some inexplicable reason, women are still underrepresented.
Yeah, I know.
Only 30 to 40% of the shows include women. And that really struck me as being odd because when I had a gallery in Houston, it was a lot easier to show women because they're a lot more women artists than there were men.
Yeah.
In that time, in that place, anyway. I mean, I know, I remember showing male artists, but it was vastly outnumbered. It was at least 60% female.
Wow.
one of the most anticipated shows I put on
uh-huh.
was actually two guys. Oh. But the funny thing was it wound up only being one guy because the second guy didn't show up for his own show. So I had one piece that he dropped off like 6 months earlier.
Did it sell?
No. It was a good thing it didn't sell because I got a letter from his soon-to-be ex-wife saying that they were seizing the work. So
it made
it a little easier that I didn't have to figure out what to do with the money.
Oh, that's good. That's good.
Let's just put one more nail on that article about the top cities. And it was the general idea that star artists, people who were well-established, mm-hmm. take home most of the money. And take home most of the shows.
Yes.
They overrepresent. And it, I don't know. I mean, it seemed like that was going to be obvious, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's why we have the idea of star power.
Right.
They bring the crowds in and they sell them. They bring them in. So I had a pretty bad ride on Sunday, but I went for another ride on Wednesday.
Uh-huh.
But,
oh, no.
But I went at 10 p.m.
Oh, that makes sense.
Yeah. I rode up to North Mountain. And I'll tell you, the best part of that ride was the gate was still open. So I was mm-hmm. able to ride up into North Mountain without any traffic. Well, there were still a few people, surprisingly enough, well mm-hmm. after closing time, there were still a few people on the trail. It was funny watching as I'm riding up the road, I could see on the trailhead there were people with their headlamps
mm-hmm.
coming down the trail.
Oh, wow.
But
weren't
it was
you
very
afraid?
Super quiet. Oh, no, I was on the paved part.
Oh, okay.
And this is the first night ride I've done since I think I was in college, but mm-hmm. I was going out testing a little bit to see if I maybe could go on the trails.
Mm-hmm.
And I absolutely cannot go on the trails at night mm-hmm. because even with a decent headlight,
mm-hmm.
I can't see. I mean, I can see the road, but I remember passing over like a speed bump and mm-hmm. not really being able to judge like how high it was and whatnot. Mm-hmm. So if I can barely ride on the road at night, there's no way I'm going on the trails. I would die instantly. I think I would die instantly.
You would probably hit that big boulder.
Well, that trail, I would just bring a shovel with me so I could dig my own grave.
Oh, God. Oh, what's the point, James?
Because I would give up.
Just get a Peloton. Just get a Peloton or not.
That disgusts me.
I know. That disgusts me, too. Or just get like, I don't know.
So Strava, do you know Strava?
I don't know anything you're talking about today. What is it?
Strava is the premier mm-hmm. app for tracking your stuff. If you uh-huh. wanted to go for a run or a swim or a bike ride, it's the premier app for that platform as well. And it's kind of like a shadow social media site because you have your profile, you can follow other people. So it's a lot like normal stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It's like Facebook, but with a lot less bad people on it. And it's just tracking your stuff. I had a point to this story when I started. Oh, no, I know what it was. Right. Sorry. So you can hook up your Peloton to Strava if you want.
Okay.
I have no beef with that. The part I have a beef with is that when you have an activity, like you go mountain biking or running,
mm-hmm.
you can also upload photos from that activity.
Mm-hmm.
But people will upload their pictures from their Peloton rides, mm-hmm. and what that is basically just a screen capture of what is on the screen. So Peloton will basically have like a 3D model of a road that you're supposed to follow, mm-hmm. and that's kind of the nice thing about it is like the computer is showing you where you're riding, and if you go up a hill,
mm-hmm.
it controls the bike, so it makes the bike harder to ride, harder to pedal. But for the love of God, don't post your screenshots from Peloton to Strava. It is really gauche.
What do they just show, like crotch shots?
No. It's a picture. It's a screenshot of the digital world that they're riding
through. Oh, a screenshot. Oh, I can't handle all this posting, schmosting. I haven't even posted anything in a while.
Talking about posting, just another little thought.
Yeah,
Instagram keeps talking about trying to enforce their 13-year-old rule. You know, under 13s aren't supposed to be on Instagram, but it's obviously, I don't know anyone who didn't start on Instagram.
At 13?
Waited. Yeah, mm-hmm. I don't know anyone who waited. It's ignored. Let's just, it's generally ignored rule.
Well, who's going to police
and so
that?
But they're working on, well, obviously they don't really want to police it because it's just more money for them. But
right. But
they are claiming that they're going to try to fix this. And of course, mm-hmm. this is Meta and Facebook, so they usually lie about this stuff. But I was thinking, yeah, I could come up with a test for under 13, you know, keep the under 13s off.
Mm-hmm.
How about an intelligence test?
Mm.
Or just a general knowledge test? Like maybe we can do a citizenship. Like for each country, whatever their citizenship questions are, if you want to be a citizen of the U.S., they ask you questions like, name the two branches of government. I'm sorry, three branches of government. There
mm-hmm.
you go. We only have two now.
Yeah, we probably only have two. After today, I think we have two.
You know, I was thinking, name the two branches of Congress. That's what I was thinking.
Okay. I don't know that you're the one to devise this test.
Why not?
Anyway, I'm just saying that. Go ahead.
No, I want to know what you mean by that.
Oh, because you said the name the two branches of government.
Well, there are two. There are more than two, but there are two.
Right.
So it's a trick question. So it's perfect, actually. I'm very good at this.
Okay, you're amazing. Go ahead.
Thank you. More important than keeping the 13-year-olds out, and this may not keep the 13-year-olds out because I don't really care about that. Uh-huh. It would keep the stupid people out.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think like they do the thing to decide if you're not a robot, they need to have like a test like that, right?
Like, you know, it's like, why find they do the, that?
I have
the robot
no.
thing.
Why?
All right, so think about this. Mm-hmm. When you do those robot tests on the websites,
uh-huh.
9 times out of 10, isn't it asking you to pick the pictures that have the stoplights in it?
Yeah.
Do you ever wonder why that is?
I don't know why. I didn't care. Why? Tell me why.
It's training for Google's self-driving cars.
Are you fucking kidding me?
Nope. That's what it is.
God, I hate this world.
I'm sorry. You shouldn't talk to me in the morning. I know too much stuff.
I know. Oh, my God. My mind is just blown.
Yeah, that was the joke they were making. Apple is trying to create a new system to be able to log on to websites and whatnot that will mm-hmm. automatically identify you as the person so that it will allow you to bypass these CAPTCHAs. That's mm-hmm. what that's called.
CAPTCHA, right.
The robot mm-hmm. testing to see if you're a robot. And the joke was, oh, looks like Apple's trying to shut down Google's self-driving project.
Oh, wow.
It's not. It's just a harmless side effect. But that's why they're always asking you to identify
stoplights. I wondered why.
Stoplights.
I thought they just ran out of ideas. Well, you know, screw it. This artist was found kind of on Instagram, or had featured her work on Instagram, and now her work is selling for like 1.5, 1.6 million. And of course, I found that compelling. And so I looked at it. Her name is Anna Wyand. And I really actually kind of like her work. I like it. And she really skyrocketed to, you know, being well known.
I'm not rocked by it.
No, I'm not rocked by it either. You know,
she's developed her craft. She can mm-hmm. paint. Congratulations.
Exactly.
But maybe I haven't seen enough of the work to get the thread, but it seems mm-hmm. like memes in search of meaning.
Oh, I didn't get that at all.
It just seems a little desperate for content. I don't know. I don't feel a lot in the paintings.
Mm-hmm.
I like the style. She's got nice color. She's got nice form.
I really do like the colors, and I really like her still lives. Like this one that's on Gagosian's site, the Gagosian.com, we'll link it. It's called Godzilla 2022. It's kind of a still life. With just like, I think it's cool. I like the starkness of it. I think I like some of her still lives better than the mm-hmm. the figurative work.
Right.
But I just thought that was interesting.
You know, the vibe I guess I'm getting from it is that she's trying to confuse people with the paintings. It feels like she's making the work to fit the modern art narrative, the contemporary
right,
art narrative
right.
of you can't understand this. If you can't understand it, it's art.
Mm-hmm. I was just taken with the fact that she paints so much better than I ever can. I was happy that she was selling her art on the beach or on Instagram for like $400, and one of her works just auctioned for like, what, 1.5, 1.6 million. In one of the articles I read about her, you know, it kind of brought home that whole thing that we've referenced over and over. It's none of that money goes back to her. This is all resale. And so while it's really exciting to see the auction world, you know, she could command now moving forward because it legitimizes her in a different realm. But, you know, they did at least pay some attention to the fact that that money goes not to her.
Well, it may not go to her, but it increases her profile, which gives her power. I mean, she didn't get the money for the resale, but mm-hmm. she can sell posters of that work now.
Exactly, yeah.
And so, she can sell her, you know, obviously original work is going to be considerably more than $400 now.
Exactly. I thought it was a very nice story about a woman artist. I applaud her. I think she's good technically. And
you know, I had two young artists back when I had the gallery in Houston who painted kind of similarly.
Oh, really?
So you got to wonder, well, how does this one break through and those two didn't?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they broke through in their own ways,
mm-hmm.
but not to
this $1.5
million.
Well, I think sometimes it's the luck of the draw and it's who you know or...
All right, in other news, other artists that we actually, I think we both responded to.
I love this.
Was this just little guy doing these tiny little sculptures,
Frode Bolius?
Frode? You would pronounce that Frode.
Or Frode?
Frode Bolius.
Bolius.
I don't know.
I thought of Frodo. I think that's why I originally liked it.
Can't stand those little hobbits.
I love hobbits. Anyway. I want to live in a hobbit house in the corner of like the Shire. Two things appealed to me on this. It was a daily sculpture project, and I think the daily tasking of this is kind of a discipline appealed to me. And then there's just like these little quirky figures that almost look like little Barbie dolls in some way.
All right, so he's a sculptor. And he's taking on a project of just creating little figurines.
Yes.
I don't know if this is his main project, but he's been working on now for the better part of the year. So it's still a little bit of a new project, but it's one he's been doing consistently. So he produces two or three sculptures per week of these little figurines. Now that we understand what we're looking at.
He made 65 pieces, I guess, since February. And they are mostly sculpted from polymer clay. I think my favorite character was the broomhead one. I just love him. I like him in the one that looks like he's wearing a pink Michelin suit. And they're just adorable.
So to put this in context, they're small figurines, like you said. They look a little bit like Barbie dolls. I mean, they don't look like Barbie dolls, but it's a figurine. So you can see.
Yeah, they have little feet.
Joe, you can think all kind, whatever you want to think of. You can think Venus of Millendorf, whatever. And that's one of the things about this project is that as far back as humans could start forming clay, we've been making small figurines for whatever reason.
Isn't that true?
We have them for going back tens of thousands of years. And so I think there's something deeply weird about it that, you know, types into the human psyche. There's a kind of almost just a normal, I don't know what I'm trying to say here.
Like a drive to like create an image of ourselves.
Just it's a base drive. Yeah, exactly. It's something innate in humans to do this. And he's doing it very creatively. And by creatively, I mean, remember when I said I thought the definition of creative was to just be able to come up with different ideas? This is what he's doing. He's just generating ideas. And one of the funny things is that it reminds me of kind of what's happening in the NFT space, because a lot of the collectibles are done this way, where they'll take a theme like a monkey, and then they draw the monkey with a sailor hat or a policeman's hat, and they have 1,000 different variations of these, and they're selling them as NFTs. And that market has collapsed, by the way. But this is a real-world version of it, which makes it so much more interesting and touchable, and because they're physical, just much more interesting.
Right.
And the polymer clay, let's just be frank, that's Sculpey, but it's a wonderful material to work with because it's fairly easy, but then you bake it and you have a nice little sculpture for all time. And he varies his theme so crazily. He's got some that look like, as you said, they look like the Michelin Man. He's wrapped in pink bubbles.
Pink bubbles.
On another one, he has like a skull. He's like a sculpture. Another one has, for some inexplicable reason, has a broom head.
I love the broom head.
You know, these artists, you got to watch them because they're crazy.
I would purchase the broom head.
I wonder how much they're selling for.
I don't know. I don't even know if he's selling them.
And that's one of the other points of this. He's not restricted to a certain theme. He's just all over the map. It's like kind of prying open his brain and seeing what's going on in his head. Like from week to week, he's got different thoughts.
Right, right. And, you know, to quote the article, he said the magic, you know, they're small sculptures intuitively made in 1, 2, or 3 days. And the magic is that they start to live a life of their own and they kind of appear while working, one leading to the other, different every time. And I loved that. Because, you know, I work a lot with the human form. I had similar experience working with the torsos. They kind of seem to take a life of their own.
I just want to challenge one thing he says. He says intuitively made. He may be talking about intuitively designed because they're not really intuitively made. That makes me think that they're just squished out without any real consideration. But these are finely crafted little sculptures, and he's a gifted sculptor, so they're not outsider art, they're not crafty kind of things. It's a sculptor. Yeah, I just want to make that known. When he says intuitively, alarms go off. But
why?
I didn't get
an alarm.
Just because when you say you're intuitive, you can make something intuitively. It's code for I don't really know what I'm doing, so
right.
I'm gonna quote call intuitive.
Right.
And I'm being pedantic about it.
Yeah, don't be pandemic. We've had enough of that.
I am a pandemic.
Oh my God.
It's too late.
Pedantic.
But I would say intuitively designed. And then he's letting his brain just kind of flow through his fingers and his highly developed sense of sculpture and allowing it to be made without filtering his thoughts too much.
Yeah.
So this is his design process. That's the intuitive part.
I guess he has some of the works in a group show in the Netherlands through July 10th. We'll link the article with the photos of his work. They're just delightful.
it's hard to express, but I don't know why it's so delightful that he has pieces that are completely surreal, mm-hmm. like a woman just walk. I think it was a female. Yeah, it's a female figure with a broom head. I don't know. I don't understand that. But then the next one is a woman who looks like she's dressed up to go backpacking. And it looks like a minifig. It looks like a figure mm-hmm. that you could just buy and play with.
Mm-hmm.
And that's another issue is like if you could buy this whole collection for your kids and let them play with them like they were action figures, I think you'd have more interesting kids.
That's a great point. Oh, I hope you gave the artist that idea. I don't think they'd want to replicate this commercially, but that's a great point because this is quite the village.
Yeah.
And they would have an incredible time creatively in their mind, like making up stories and playing with these figures. I would have loved that as a kid.
Well, I think it also might be good to run some social or psychological experiments on kids to see how they deal with these different figures.
Mm-hmm.
That's the evil genius in me.
Getting back to the Daily Sculpture Project, you know, like I was doing the 100 days of creativity. And I've lost track of what day we're on because of everything else that's going on in this house right now. I think that's what grabbed my attention first because he's doing this on a daily basis and kind of exploring that. And it really does focus you in a different way. And so
that's a really good point. As an example, just imagine if you were to draw, I don't know, like a leaf, like decide you woke up in the morning and you're going to draw a leaf every day for the next 100 days or for until you die.
Mm-hmm.
There are so many different ways to take that. And, you know, the first couple of days is basically you just getting out your preconceptions of leaves.
Mm-hmm.
But then you start thinking about it.
Mm-hmm.
And then you really focus on it.
Mm-hmm.
And then you either maybe you just redraw the same leaf over and over and over again.
Right.
Which case you're going to really get to know that form and how it looks on the page. Or maybe you do a different leaf every day.
Right.
In which case you're going to be looking for all kinds of different sources to what leaf am I going to do tomorrow?
Mm-hmm.
And you suddenly start learning about all these different things and how leaves look. And after 100 days, you're going to be master of leaves.
You're one with the leaf.
You're one with the leaf.
Right. I was thinking more in terms of the day over day over day experience, almost like a meditation,
mm-hmm.
where then it becomes almost intuitive and you're going the next step and you're not necessarily planning it out, but it's just like coming almost from a visceral place. That's kind of what I took. I mean, we looked at it again, surprise, we looked at the same word two different ways.
No, I like that. I think that's a good point. You kind of excavated more meaning from it.
Mm-hmm.
Because getting to know the subject so well,
mm-hmm.
you don't have to think about it consciously as much.
Right. Gosh, we actually discussed some art and some artists today.
Yeah, but I think I'm going back to bed.
I think, well, I've got to get ready to go and deal with more stuff. Yeah. So.
Good luck with that.
Thank you. Okay, well, stay tuned for more art.
Boy, could you say that with more enthusiasm?
Oh, I'm sorry. It's just been a lot. I got about 3 hours of sleep and I'm just...
Stay tuned.
Stay tuned for more.
For more art.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're both done.
We're both done. Thank you. Bye.